Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello and welcome to the RTC Weekly Download. I'm Jim Dolan, your host for the hour or so. We have some comedy coming up, and one of the best, Fibber McGee and Molly. And McGee is sick, and that's from 1946. That's not a comment on the quality of the show. That's just McGee is sick. You know, sometimes it happens. So we'll listen to that, and after that, it's a trip to the doctor. So I guess that's appropriate. McGee may go to see Dr. Kildare, but not in this episode. This is called Angela and Stephen Kester, and that's from 1950. So that's what's coming up. Now let's get ready for Fibber McGee and Molly in 3, 2, 1.
Hey, Molly.
Yes, McGee?
What night is this?
Tuesday.
Well, turn the radio on quick. I want to hear Fred Waring.
Yes, but dearie, Fred Waring.
Come on. It's almost time. He's on for Johnson's Wax. Swell music and some wonderful... Well, what are you staring at me for?
The summer's over. Fred Waring is not on for Johnson's Wax now.
He isn't? Who is?
We are.
Huh?
Who? The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. During my years with Fibber McGee and Molly, I've become kind of used to wax. But you know, even today, it always seems to me there's a touch of magic in the way wax turns an everyday object into a thing of surprising beauty. Take one of your tables, say. Rub a little Johnson's paste wax on it, polish it lightly, and right before your eyes, that table becomes a shining, richly polished treasure. The whole surface glows brightly, and the grain of the wood is clear and lovely. All through your home, you'll find that Johnson's Wax performs similar miracles. In every room, wax-polished floors take on a mellow sheen that adds enormously to their appearance. Johnson's Wax does wonders for your furniture, too, and greatly enriches the looks of things like windowsills, bookends, and leather articles. And think what a great comfort it is to you to know that Johnson's Wax is constantly on duty to guard against dirt, wear, and spilled things. I hope you'll use it regularly. You'll be really pleased if you do. Johnson's Wax, paste, liquid, or cream. When some men are sick, they just want to crawl into a corner and be left alone. The other 99 out of 100 want to be babied, nursed, coddled, pampered, and spoon-fed. Out of the grab bag of matrimony, Mrs. McGee of 79 Westville Vista had to snag one of the latter kind. You'll see what we mean as we meet Fibber McGee and Molly.
Oh, imagine me being took sick like this when there's so many things to be done, like taking down the screens.
Now, don't you worry about the screen, sweetheart. They'll wait till you get well.
Yeah, but maybe this is a lingering illness. Maybe better hire somebody else to take them down.
Nonsense. I won't have anybody clattering around here while you're not well. Glass of water, pet?
No. No, thanks. Light me a cigar, will you? I ain't got the strength to strike a match.
No cigars. Not if I have to light them. It'd be silly for both of us to be sick. Besides, Dr. Gamble is on his way over, and he'd be very annoyed if he found you smoking a cigar.
I'll stick it under the pillow when he comes.
You haven't enough fever to account for all the smoke. No, I hardly think that...
Oh, that must be the doctor now, Molly. You better start boiling some water.
What for?
Well, I don't know. That's the first thing a doctor always asks for. Hot water and clean towels. They always got to have hot water.
Oh, dear. Come in. Oh, hello, Dr. Gamble. Come right in.
Hello, Molly. What's the matter with little Caesar? Swallow his bubble gum?
Hi, Doctor. Good of you to come.
Would you like me to heat some water, Doctor?
Yes, please, my dear. And put some coffee in it. Now then, my boy, tell me about yourself.
Okay, Doctor. I was born in a little white house on top of Kickapoo Hill. Back in Peoria, of poor but honest parents.
Oh, stop it. I don't want your history. I want your symptoms. Never mind. When did you start feeling like this?
Just a few nights ago, Doctor. He just started to turn green, like Christmas jewelry.
Have you eaten anything unusual, McGee? I mean, aside from your usual eccentric menu of chili con carne, malted milks, and chocolate donuts.
Nope. Just a cigar is all.
A cigar? He ate a cigar?
Well, technically, I wouldn't say I ate it, Doc. I swallowed it.
One of your regular brands?
Yes, it was, Doctor.
I see. Swallowed one of his own cigars and lived several days. You don't need me, McGee. You want Robert Ripley. Tell me, Wonder Man, what was the occasion for this Panatella picnic?
Well, we were listening to the Lewis Moriella prize fight, Doctor.
Yeah. And when Moriella come to the microphone afterwards and made his speech, Well, I gulped my butt.
You know, Doctor, I was so fascinated by McGee's expression, I never did hear what Mr. Moriella said.
Lucky girl. I am happy to report, my boy, that you have the healthy pulse of a brewery horse. But I don't like your color.
Well, if you don't like it now, you should have seen it the night he swallowed the cigar. He was about the color of a bookkeeper's eye shade.
I'd like to have seen that. Here, these will fix you up.
Ooh, pills.
What are they, Doctor?
These, my dear, are placebos. I give them to very few people, then only in unusual circumstances.
What did you say they were, Doc?
Placebos. Hmm. Take one every half hour with water or milk. Every half hour, mind you. On the dot.
Yeah.
Not every 29 minutes or 32 minutes, but on the half hour. Understand?
I'll see to it, Doctor. I'll set the alarm clock here.
Fine. Call me if he should develop any strange complications, such as wanting to get up and do some work. I'll be at the hospital in the operating room.
Oh, in the operating room. You got a serious case in hand, Doc?
No, but with the meat shortage, it's the only carving I have a chance to do these days. Bye now.
Oh, my, isn't he a sweet old character?
Mm.
Here, I'll set this alarm clock for you, and as soon as it rings, you can start taking your pills.
Hey, I better take one right now. They look good. Give me the clock. I'll set it for right now.
Well, here, but I don't see what...
Give me the pill, quick. Glass of water.
Well, I'll set it for another half hour. Is there anything else you want, dearie?
Yes.
What?
Light me a cigar.
The King's Men sing, doing what comes naturally.
Folks are dumb where I come from. They ain't had any learning. Still they're happy as can be, doing what comes naturally. Folks like us could never fuss with schools and books and learning. Still we've gone from A to Z, doing what comes naturally. You don't have to know how to read or write when you're out with a feller in the pale moonlight. You don't have to look in a book to find what he thinks of the moon and what is on his mind. That comes naturally. That comes naturally.
My uncle down in Texas can't even sign his name. He signs his name with X's,
but they cash him just the same. Uncle Bill was always ill, but never saw a doctor. He just died at 93, doing what comes naturally. Uncle Jed has never read an almanac on drinking.
Still, he's always on a spree,
doing what comes naturally. Sister Sal, whose music gal, has never had a lesson.
Still, she's learned to sing off-key,
doing what comes naturally.
You don't have to go to a private school,
not to pick up a penny by a stubborn mule.
You don't have to have a professor's dome,
not to go for the honey when the bee's at home. That comes naturally. Naturally, that's natural.
My uncle don't pay taxes. His address never gives. They can't collect his taxes
because they don't know where he lives. Uncle Bill.
got angry when they caught him stealing chickens. I'm within my rights, says he. 30 days, says the judge, says he, for doing what comes naturally.
Feeling any better, dearie? Anything I can do for you?
Yes.
What is it?
Turn the page of this magazine for me, will you? Hey, is it time for my pill again yet?
No, no, not yet. When the alarm rings, it's time.
And put the pills in the water glass close to the couch. Remember what the doctor says. Not 29 minutes, not 32 minutes, but on the half hour.
I wonder what a placebo is. Must be a new medicine like penicillin and sulfa.
And benifrenia.
What on earth is benifrenia? I never heard of that.
Of course you haven't. I'm going to invent it as soon as I get up and around again. Going to make a concentrated essence of plain grass.
Grass?
Yep. What's one of the strongest animals? A horse. And what does a horse eat? Grass. What animal is always calm, never nervous? A cow. What does a cow eat? Grass. Look at a dog. Intelligent animal. When a dog feels sick, what does he do? Goes out and eats some grass. How about it?
Wonderful idea.
Betcha.
3 spoonfuls of that, and you can pull a wagon, chase automobiles, and sell your hide to a tannery.
No, I'm serious, Molly. I think grass... Hey, is that alarm clock running?
Yes, yes, yes. Calm yourself. I'll see that you... Oh, look who's coming, McGee.
Hmm?
The girl from the beauty parlor. I wonder what she wants. You could run upstairs, dearie, if you don't feel like talking.
No, no, I'll stay. Muss my hair up a little. I want to look restless. Thanks.
Come in.
It's just I, Mrs. McGee, Elsie Merkel from the Wistful Vista Saloon of Beauty.
Oh, heavenly days. Do come in, Elsie. This is my husband. McGee, this is Miss Merkel from the beauty parlor.
How'd you do, Miss Merkel?
Very pleased to meet your acquaintance, I'm sure. Any husband of Mrs. McGee's is a friend of mine, I always say. But the reason why I come over, Mrs. McGee, was you left your compact in the shop yesterday, so I brung it over. Because a girl without a compact is like a ship without a udder.
I think you mean rudder, Elsie.
Not necessarily. I was on a cattle boat.
Never mind. Well, Elsie, I really appreciate your taking the trouble to bring back my compact.
Oh, it was a distinct pleasure, Mrs. McGee. I wanted to take...
Hey, my pill, Molly. A placebo. Quick, hand me the water.
Right on the dot, McGee. Now I'll set the clock for another half hour.
Gee, does a minute make so much difference taking a pill, Mr. McGee?
It does in my case, sis. The doctor says not 29 minutes after or 32 minutes after, but every half hour on the button. When you're taking placebos, you don't monkey around.
Our doctor says he doesn't prescribe them very often, Elsie.
I'm a special case. I'll probably be wrote up in the medical journals. Like that woman in Arkansas who had 4 children and a fox terrier.
Gracious heavens!
She had 4 children and a fox terrier that used to sit by their cribs and rock them with his paw. You gotta go now, sis.
Yes, thank you. My next client for a Hannah Rinse is Miss Fifi Tremaine, and I and her always have so much to talk about. Like, for instance, what Gloria Gottlotz did when the fella she married turned out to be a snuggler.
Heavenly days, a smuggler?
No, a snuggler. He was snuggling with the housemaid and the seamstress. And what I knew about that family would fill a book that would stop the circulation in a circulating library. Well, I hope you get well, Mr. McGee. Goodbye.
She hopes I get well. That's a pretty thought. Do I look that bad, Molly?
No, you don't look bad at all, dearie. And I must say, Dr. Gamble didn't seem very perturbed about you.
Oh, no. He gave me the placebos, didn't he? And he don't give placebos to everybody. I'll bet I got some obscure disease that people don't know.
Oh, folks, I was just passing by and... Oh, I'm sorry. Taking a little nap, pal?
No, no. He's ill, Mr. Wilcox.
I get dizzy spells, Junior.
Yes, I know.
You're looking good, Junior. Nice and tan. Took a yachting trip on a fishing boat this summer, didn't you?
Yeah, Lake Superior. Had a wonderful time. And the strangest thing happened one day.
Catch a mermaid, Mr. Wilcox? You know, if they're under 18, you have to throw them back.
No, listen, I was on deck one day telling Jose...
Who?
Jose Ducharme, fellow that owned the boat.
Oh.
Greatest fly fisherman who ever cut a hook out of his leg. Well, we were sitting on deck one day, and I was telling him all about Johnson's car new.
Oh, I just bet you were.
We were talking about Johnson's car new and how it's the tired car owner's friend because it beautifies a dingy car with so little effort.
And the strange thing that happened, Mr. Wilcox?
Yeah, get with it, Waxy. Skip the part about how you just apply car new, let it dry, and wipe it off for a showroom shine that you can see your happy little face in. And we know how it cleans and polishes in one teensy-weensy application. Now, Goon.
Read that again, dearie.
Huh? Oh, now go on, Junior. Words were kind of run together there.
Well, a few minutes later, when they tried to raise the anchor, it was fouled on something.
Mm-hmm.
When we finally got it up, it was dragging a muddy, rusty, dripping old Maxwell.
Heavenly days. Did it have a violin lying on the front seat?
No, but quick as a flash, I turned to Jose and said, "Now there is one of the few cars I ever saw that Johnson's car knew couldn't do much for."
Well, Goon, Waxy, get to the point.
Well, that's all, but I thought it was rather interesting that we should have just been talking about Carnew before this thing happened. Don't you see? It's rather a startling coincidence.
That story, Mr. Wilcox, had all the dramatic impact of a ketchup label.
I know a guy who carves tombstones that's looking for a scriptwriter, Junior. I'll send you over. You tell about as dead an anecdote as I ever heard.
Now, you're just envious because interesting things never happen to you, pal. Well, I better run along, kids. Anything I can do?
Yes, Junior.
What, pal?
Run along.
Okay, take care of yourself.
That guy can be duller than a dime store chisel. Hey, don't go away. Where are you going?
I simply must go upstairs, dearie, and sort the laundry.
Hmm.
If you want anything, just pound on the wall or something.
Hmm.
And if that alarm clock goes off, take the placebo quickly.
Okay, but don't be gone long. I might have an eclipse.
The word is relapse, sweetheart. An eclipse is a term used in astronomy. And you don't have a heavenly body. Just a cute one. Now, you be a good boy and take your pill when the bell rings.
Okay. Ah, there goes a good kid. And what a nurse. Only thing Florence Nightingale had that she hasn't got is a bustle. I wanted chili con carne and waffles for supper tonight. She'd cook them for me, sick as I am. And sick as I am, that's what I want. By George, when she comes... Hey, Molly, there's somebody at the door. Hey, Molly. Oh, well. Come in.
Hi, mister.
Oh, hello there, Teeny. You better not get too close to me now. I'm a sick man.
Okay. Say, I rode an airplane this summer, mister.
Oh, you did, eh?
Hmm?
I says you did, eh?
Did what?
You rode in an airplane this summer.
I know it. It was my uncle's airplane. We flew a million miles high, and he shut off the motor, and it started to glide, and we glid all the way home.
That's very interesting, sis, but you don't mean you glid. You glided all the way home.
Oh. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I don't know very much about airplanes. It was the first time I ever rided in one.
Not rided, Teeny, rode. It's the past tense of the subjunctive taking a plural object in the participle.
See, is it really? Anyway, there were so many clouds, they hold the ground so we couldn't even see it, I bet you.
Please, sis, not hold the ground, hid the ground.
Pardon me.
Hmm.
But gee, mister, was I ever excited when the airplane dipped? Oh, boy, it dipped fast.
Dove, sis.
Boy, it dove fast. Criminy, and when we arrived home...
Arrived?
When we arrived home and drived up the driveway...
Drove up the driveway!
Sure. When we drove up the driveway, why we... Look, mister.
Hmm?
Are you going to be busy by January 15th?
January 15th is a long way off. Why'd you ask?
I'm coming over and tell you a story,
well,
I bet you.
Fine. Be glad to hear it, Teeny. But why January 15th in particular?
Because the way you butt in and interrupt and everything, it'll be an awful cold day when I tell you anything again. Go on, mister.
Billy Mills and the orchestra, and I Got the Sun in the Morning.
Thank you.
placebo. Where's the water? Okay, Billy.
All right, McGee? Are the placebos helping any?
My gosh, they're marvelous, Molly. Where Doc Gamble digs up these mysterious drugs, I'll never know.
No, you won't either. I was going to ask him, but you never get any real information out of doctors.
No, nurses either. If you ask a nurse what your temperature is, she gives you that toothy smile and says, "Well, shall we have our sponge bath now?" That always embarrasses me. Shall we have our bath now?
Sounds like the municipal plunge. Well, you need anything?
No, thanks. Just be sure the alarm clock is running. Don't want to miss my next pill time. Doc emphasized that I should always take...
Come in. Well, for goodness sake, look
who... Hello there, daughter. Hi, Johnny.
Hi, old-timer.
What's the matter with you? Got the pip?
I don't know what I got exactly, old-timer. Just sick, that's all. Got to take one of these pills every half hour on the dot. Not 29 minutes after.
Or 32 minutes after.
But right on the half hour. Shows you how potent this stuff is. Can't give it a minute either way.
Well, sure hurts me to see a fine, healthy boy like you laid up, Johnny. Personally, never had a sick day in my life.
Really? Never a sick day?
Never a sick day. But I've sure put in some horrible nights, kid. Yep. Though since I moved to my new boarding house, I walk 6 miles before breakfast every morning.
No kidding. 6 miles before breakfast. Where do you go?
Bathroom down the hall. Well, maybe it ain't exactly 6 miles, but doggone if it don't seem like it through them cold halls. Then after I take my ice cold shower...
Heavenly days, old-timer. You shouldn't take ice cold showers. It's too much of a shock.
Daughter... It ain't half the shock it'd be if the dump ever had some hot water.
I guess most boarding houses are the same, old-timer. I remember when I was in vaudeville with my old partner, Fred Nittany from Starved Rock, Illinois. We stayed in some pretty fantastic places, believe me. To this day, my right arm is 2 inches longer than my left.
From reaching for the butter, dearie?
No, from pushing away the prunes.
Johnny, but that ain't the way I heard it. The way I heard it, one feller says, the telefeller says, "Think President Truman is going to run for re-election?" "Sure," says telefeller. "Friend of mine in Washington just been called in for a conference." "Is that so?" says first feller. "Politician?" "No," says telefeller. "Piano tuner." Well, to get it there, I was supposed to be two fellas. I said, be good to yourself there, Johnny. Yeah, yeah. Go on.
You know, dearie, if it's a nice day tomorrow, I think you should sit out on the front porch for a little while.
Oh, quick! My placebo. The water. Hurry.
Well, the doctor certainly ought to be proud of the way you're following instructions.
I'll say so. I popped them pills into my puss before that dad-ratted sleep buster stopped clanging. And you know what?
Know what?
Them pills are doing strange things to me. My beard is growing faster. Look at it. I need a shave again already.
You mean already since yesterday morning?
Oh, didn't I shave this morning?
No.
Oh, besides that, my fever's gone down. My chest feels absolutely cool to the touch.
Why not? You spilled half that glass of water on your pajamas.
I did? Well, what do you know? Nevertheless, I got an instinctive feeling that them pills are working wonders. I got a terrific appetite. I could even... Fine sick room. Might as well be convalescing in Times Square. Come in.
Well, McGee, look who's here. Mayor Latrivia.
Good day, Molly. Don't get up, McGee.
Don't worry, Your Honor. Oh, my goodness, you're all dressed up, aren't you? Gardenia, gloves, and everything.
Making a campaign speech, Latrivia?
No, McGee. Well, since I saw you last, I've fallen in... Well, that is to say...
There is a woman.
Well, spray me with DDT. I'm crawling with curiosity. Who's the lucky chick, Chuck?
The lady is Miss Fifi Tremaine, an actress.
Fifi Tremaine? Heavenly days. Isn't that the girl Dr. Gamble used to be so mad about?
I believe Dr. Gamble is still interested in Miss Tremaine.
Oh, brother. This situation is fraught with something. Doc, know you're dating this babe, bud?
We three have gone places together several times. Usually to some place where there's dancing, at my suggestion. I'm an excellent dancer.
Oh.
Dr. Gamble is not. But, never mind me. What seems to be the trouble with you, McGee?
Oh, just a little upset or something, Mr. Mayor. Your rival in love was here a while ago to see him.
Yeah, you know what he gave me, Latriv? Placebos.
Placebo? Not really.
You know what they are, Mr. Mayor?
Yes, I do. I think. This is very interesting.
You said it, kiddo. I got to take one every half hour. Not at 29 minutes.
Not at 32 minutes.
Every half hour on the nose. I got the alarm clock right here, so I won't miss him.
Well, I have very great admiration for Dr. Gamble as a physician. And if he gave you placebos, I imagine that's exactly what your condition demands. Have you a dictionary?
Sure, Latriv. One over your shoulder there on the bookshelf.
Oh.
Right between the Rover Boys in Southern Waters and How to Build 20 Sailboats.
We also have Five Little Peppers and How They Grew. But himself here is pressing some neckties in it. Did you get it, Mr. Mayor?
Oh, yes, I have it. Now, let me see. P-L-A-C-E-B-O, placebo. Ah, here it is. Just as I thought.
What is it, Mr. Mayor?
Yeah, tell me, Latrivia. My gosh, it may be something I'm paying $100 a gram for. What is it? What's it say?
It says placebo.
Yeah?
A mixture or pill of no medicinal value... given to satisfy a patient's whims.
Whims? Oh, my gosh. You hear that, Molly? I got the whims. Call Dr. Gamble again. Quarantine the house. I got the whims.
Has this ever happened to you? You're visiting a friend's house, and eventually you drift back into the kitchen, and there on the floor is the sort of linoleum surface you've always dreamed about. It has a beautifully smooth luster, free from dirt and stains, and its colors are bright and fresh. Ask your friend, and chances are she'll tell you the only thing she uses on that kitchen floor is Johnson's self-polishing glow coat. When she spills something or dirt tracks in, she simply wipes the floor with a damp cloth, and right away, it's beautiful again. What actually happens is that Glow Coat forms a tough, shining coat of wax, which keeps dirt and spilled things away from the surface of the floor, keeps it bright and new-looking years longer. Of course, Johnson's Glow Coat is easy to use. There's no rubbing or buffing. 20 minutes after you've applied it, your linoleum and other floors are ready to walk on and beautifully wax-polished. Try it, won't you? Johnson's self-polishing Glow Coat. You'll like it.
Hey, Molly, Doc Gamble was just here again. And you know what he said?
No, what did he say?
He says I got the worst case of whims he'd ever seen. Says I got him chronic.
Heavenly days, is he going to operate?
I asked him that. He says it was a tempting idea, but we better try a diet first.
What kind of a diet?
No moose meat.
Well, that I can arrange.
Good.
Good night. Good night, all.
The Mega makers of Johnson's Wax Products for Home and Industry have brought you Fibber, McGee, and Molly with Bill Thompson, B. Benaderet, Arthur Q. Bryan, and Gail Gordon. The script was by Don Quinn and Phil Leslie. This is Harlow Wilcox inviting you to be with us again next Tuesday night. Good night.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Now, before we go on up to the hospital to pop in on Dr. Kildare, let's go to the finishing school first and see what's happening.
Well, tonight we have a little surprise for you. You guys have been writing in for various requests from your pinup girls, none of them sensible, of course. So we thought we'd give you the real lowdown on some of your favorites. Tonight we're going to take you to a girl's dormitory. Yeah, you heard me. We're going behind the scenes of that extra fancy academy for girls, Miss Phoebe Gushmore's finishing school. And there we will find such cuties as the Tennessee thrush Dinah Shore, lovely, luscious Latin Lena Romay, the hilly little hillbilly Judy Canova, glamorous, amorous Marilyn Maxwell, and a newcomer to the Hollywood scene, vivacious, curvaceous Martha Stewart. Well, let's get going, then. Follow me, and we'll infiltrate up to the school through this hedge here. Now, here we are, Miss Gushmore's finishing school, and we'll just... I beg your pardon. I didn't see you there.
Well, why don't you watch it, bud? You almost knocked these field glasses out of my hand.
Well, I'm sorry, but who are you anyway?
Why, I'm Professor Jerry Lester.
Jerry Lester, huh?
Yes, I'm the professor of the school.
Hey, professor, well, what are you doing out here with those field glasses?
Well, you got to study anatomy before you teach it. Hey, get a load of the view through these binoculars.
Professor, I've got news for you.
Really?
You're doing a lot of peeping for nothing. All the shades are down.
Well, pretty soon one of us is going to get careless, and it ain't going to be me. Well, it's just about time for Miss Gushmore to be waking the girls up.
Yeah, let's listen. Maybe they're getting up now.
Get up, 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 it's 6 o'clock.
Now stop
complaining and get up.
Now, Dinah Shaw, you get out of bed.
Oh, Miss Gushmore, I had the most wonderful dream. Oh, it was beautiful.
Really? What was it?
I dreamt I slapped Clark Gable's face.
Oh, what's so beautiful about that?
I didn't tell you the first part.
I had also a dream about Clark Gable, too.
Oh, did you, Lena?
Only I did not slap his face.
Oh, you didn't?
You know, sometimes I am happy I do not understand English too much.
Well, I had a better dream than all of you. I dreamed that I was all alone on a desert island with 8,000 men.
Alone on an island with 8,000 men? What happened?
What could happen? They built me a boat.
Well, last night must have been dream night. Marilyn Maxwell, didn't you have a dream?
Yeah, but I'm not talking.
Well, that's all you girls think of is men, 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 men. I want you to stop it. Martha Stewart, why aren't you getting dressed?
Well, I'm mad. I never have any dreams. Every night I sleep like a log.
Timber!
Come on, girl, let's go.
Well, well, girls, I see you're here bright and early. line up for calisthenics.
Good morning, Professor.
Why, good morning, Dinah.
It's a good morning.
Good morning, Lena.
Good morning, Professor.
I feel like a cow that's just been branded. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning, Professor.
Judy, I want to talk to you later about siphoning a gas tank. Well, good morning, Marilyn.
Good morning, Professor.
Here's your cigar. And here's our little newcomer to Hollywood, Martha Stewart.
Good morning, Professor.
Well, now, wait a minute. Don't tell me you just got to town. Well, that's enough calisthenics. You girls may now put your lipstick on. And Judy Canova, will you please take your feet down off the desk?
Them are just my shoes. My feet are on the floor.
Well, why don't you put on your shoes?
What, and squash my lunch? You sure can't carry a lot of victual in these GI shoes.
You carry a mess of feet in them, too.
Gosh, Judy, where did you get those G.I. shoes?
Well, sir, I had a date with a soldier the other night, and the rest of him got away. Say, I wonder if I'd send these shoes to the Army, would they refill them for me, you reckon?
Now, Judy, and all you girls, remember what Miss Gushmore said. You shouldn't think about men so much. Martha Stewart, are you ready for your singing lesson?
Are the stars out tonight? I don't know if it's cloudy or bright, for I only have eyes for you, dear. The moon may be high, but I can't see a thing in the sky, for I only have eyes for you. In a garden or on a crowded avenue, you are here, so am I. Maybe millions of people go but they all disappear from view.
Very good, Martha. Very good. Stay after school.
But, Professor, if I know my lesson, why do I have to stay after school?
Very interesting question. I'll answer that later in Griffith Park.
The story of Dr. Kildare.
Whatsoever house I enter, there will I go for the benefit of the sick. Whatsoever things I see or hear concerning the life of men, I will keep silent thereon, counting such things to be held as sacred trusts. I will give no deadly drug to any, though it be
the story of Dr. Kildare, starring Lou Ayres and Lionel Barrymore. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer brought you those famous motion pictures. Now, for the first time, this exciting, heartwarming series is heard on radio. In just a moment, the story of Dr. Kildare. But first, your announcer. Now the story of Dr. Kildare, starring Lou Ayres as Dr. Kildare and Lionel Barrymore as Dr. Gillespie.
Blair General Hospital, one of the great citadels of American medicine. A clump of gray-white buildings planted deep in the heart of New York, the nerve center of medical progress, where great minds and skilled hands wage man's everlasting battle against death and disease. Blair General Hospital, where life begins, where life ends, where life goes on.
Good morning, Doctor. Here, dear. Oh, my, you look tired.
Morning, Parker. I am tired. Dr. Gillespie in yet?
He's down in the clinic. Oh, that man.
Bad news.
Bad? Oh, horrible.
Fine. Let's see now. Dr. Kildare speaking.
Hello. Is this Dr. James Kildare?
Yes. Who's this, please?
Jimmy. Jimmy, this is Angela. Angela Kester.
Angela Kester? Well, I didn't know you were in New York. When'd you get in?
Last night. Flew in from Chicago. Jimmy, I must see you right away. It's important.
Well, I won't be off duty until tonight.
Jimmy, it's an emergency. I've got to see you now.
Hey, you do sound worried. What's the trouble?
It's Stephen, my husband. Jimmy, something terrible's going to happen. It's mine. He's sick.
Well, who's your doctor, Angela?
I haven't any doctor. Not anymore. Oh, please.
But, Angela, my work here at the hospital, I can't
please,
possibly...
Please, Jimmy. 612, East 73rd. Believe me, I'm afraid. I'm terribly afraid.
I don't understand, Angela. You're afraid of what?
He wants to kill me. I know Stephen wants to kill me.
Wait a minute,
you've
Angela.
You've got to renew. Oh, please, hurry.
612, East 73rd. Is that right?
Yes, Jimmy.
All right, Angela. I'll be right out. Kildare, what's the big hurry? You're not an intern anymore.
Rush call, Dr. Gillespie.
Rush call? Where?
East 73rd, old friend of mine. Lots of trouble.
Well, which is it? Not enough love or not enough money?
Might be either. She's afraid her husband is going to kill her.
So that's enough to keep a woman's mind off her housework.
Dr. Kildare.
Well, nosy Parker. Why do you keep on busting in here all the time?
Oh, Dr. Kildare.
Parker, if anyone wants me, I'll be at the home of Mrs. Angela Kester.
Oh, all right, Doctor, but just a moment.
Parker, I'm in a hurry.
But there's a man. He just came into the reception room. He wants to see you.
I'm sorry, Parker,
he
but
says
I...
His name is Kester, Stephen Kester.
That's the way it's been going with her, Doctor. Every week, she... It's a little worse.
I see.
5 years ago, Angela Kester was one of the finest concert pianists in this country. Today, she's not.
When did all this begin, Steve? I mean, when did she start blowing up in the middle of concerts?
Close to 5 years ago, a few months after we were married.
Did Angela show any abnormal behavior just before that first breakdown?
Oh, she was working awfully hard, practicing 16 hours a day sometimes. It was kind of strange. Like, something was pushing her, as though her success was a matter of life and death. It was almost as if she was possessed.
And it's still the same. The harder she works at her music, the more the obsession grows.
Mm-hmm.
You said before there was a particular composition that she keeps on playing.
Yes. A revolutionary etude by Chopin. Every time she sits down to play. Sometimes she can go on for, half an hour without breaking. Beethoven, Liszt, Brahms. And she goes back to it.
Does that piece have any particular significance to Angela?
None that I know of. It was one of her father's favorites. He's dead now. He had great ideas about Angela's career.
I see. Now about this latest fixation of hers. This fear that you are going to murder her.
It's the first time I've heard that one.
It was the first thing he told me on the phone.
It's really getting bad.
Yes. I think I'd better drop out to your place and see Angela for a few minutes. Come on, we better hurry.
There we go. I can watch her here from behind these glass doors.
Is the nurse with her constantly?
Yes. I don't dare leave her alone.
He still plays beautifully.
Yes, I know. But wait. Rachel, sir.
Steve, the doctors that have been handling Angela's case, what kind of treatments have they been giving her?
Oh, I think she's been through about all of them. 2 courses of insulin shock, 2 courses of electric shock. I don't know what else.
When did you have her last shock treatment?
Oh, about 6 months ago. They helped for a while, then she slips back into the same old condition. Listen. You hear? She's breaking it down.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I see what you mean. It's almost as if something had taken hold of her, pushing her, twisting her body, some strange force. Steve, stay here. I'm going in. Rush. I'm Dr. Kildare, Blair General.
Oh, yes, doctor.
Any sedatives in the house?
Yes, doctor.
Grain and a half a second off, please.
Yes, doctor.
What's happening to me? My hand. Can anybody help me? Can anybody help
me? Miss Angela, I'm going to help you. Don't be afraid.
Jimmy, my hand. They won't let me. They're trapped. These notes on this paper, they trap my hands. My hands.
Then we'll set them free, Angela. Now, don't be afraid. I'm going to help you. Yes, Dr. Gillespie.
Ah, sit down, Jimmy. Sit down. Here, sit down. Cigarette?
Thanks, I could use one.
I think it's high time somebody told you this.
What?
You've been going through all. Ever since you got back to the hospital from the Army.
Oh, now let's not go over all that again.
And as we will too. Just because they appointed you a resident physician, that doesn't mean that you have to do all the work.
But you know how short-handed we've been, how many patients we have.
Yeah, and you go on out and take on more. Look, Jimmy, you've just got so much energy to spend in one day, and that's all.
How are you going to tell me I need a vacation?
That's exactly what you do mean. Listen, Jimmy, you've been a doctor long enough to know you can't save all the lives in the world.
Sorry, Dr. Gillespie, I can't take the time off. Besides, I've got the research work on leukemia to do, and that paper for the medical institute.
And besides that, you'd hate to be away from that beautiful nurse, Mary Lamont. Huh? Go on, admit it.
Oh, your spies are working overtime.
They're always working overtime. You haven't dated Mary Lamont for 3 weeks. That's a late bullet. Why haven't you?
Oh, the Angela Kester thing, I guess. Takes a lot of time.
Well, why did you take the case in the first place? You don't have enough to do here, huh? You have to go out looking for work.
Doctor, until her mind got sick, Angela Kester was on her way to becoming one of the greatest concert pianists in the world. I'm convinced she can still be one of the greatest pianists in the world.
Yeah, well, that's fine. How do you go about curing her?
I'm not sure yet.
What's your diagnosis?
She's suffering from a neurosis, obsessive compulsive, superimposed paranoid tendencies.
I have to give you credit, Gilbert. When you pick a bad one, you pick the worst. What are the symptoms?
Deep-seated compulsive complex is the first thing I noticed. See, Angela had one of those fathers who wants great things for his children, whether they want it or not. He was a second-rate pianist himself, but he was determined Angela would reach the top. I guess he impressed her with that as soon as she was old enough to understand.
Stupid parents.
Her father was a widower. Didn't have much money, but he spent every spare dollar he could get on piano lessons for Angela. Evidently, he made her realize how much he was sacrificing to make her a great artist.
And it grew out of all proportion in her mind.
Right. And by the time she was 10 years old, she was afraid to be a failure. She had to make it. There was no other way out for her.
When did it first show on the surface?
Oh, 5 years ago. Ansel was about 22 at the time. The night before she was to sail for Europe for a concert tour, she had a recital at Carnegie Hall. She went to pieces.
Oh, too bad, too bad. You spotted the neurosis, all right. Obsessive, compulsive. What about the paranoid tendencies?
Well, they've just started showing up lately. She's developing all kinds of persecution complexes. Thinks the public's against her, thinks her husband's going to kill her.
Too bad. Ah, rather funny. Hello, Dr. Gillespie talking. Huh? Who? Just a minute. Go there. You.
Hello? Yes. When? I'll be right over. That was Stephen Kester, Angela's husband.
Well?
Angela just shot herself.
The story of Dr. Kildare will continue in just a moment.
Nurse Parker. What? Mr. Willingham. Mr. Willingham. Oh.
Parker, what's that infernal babbling going on out there?
Oh, Mr. Willingham, call me that later.
I want my medical journal. Where have you hidden it?
It's right back in the middle of your desk.
Then why didn't you say so? Always hiding things.
Oh.
By the way, what about those reprints I asked for? The ones on prefrontal lobotomy?
They're sending them up from the research library.
Well, tell them to hurry. Patient's dying.
Doctor, you don't have a patient.
Keep your nose out of my business. Now go on. Stop.
That's the Gillespie's office.
Parker, this is Dr. Kildare. Just finished surgery.
Yes, Doctor.
Here's the report on Angela Kester that Dr. Gillespie asked for.
All right, Doctor, I'll take it.
Self-inflicted bullet wound on left side of chest. Bullet penetrated the chest cage. Small pneumothorax.
No serious damage.
Bullet lodged just beneath the skin under the left shoulder blade. Easily removed. Patient resting comfortably. Got it?
Yes, Doctor, thank you.
Now tell Dr. Gillespie I'm going over to Solomon's for a bite to eat.
All right, Doctor. Get your nap, Jimmy. I heard every word.
Mary, where'd you come from?
Been following you for days.
How about coffee?
Wonderful. Let's go.
Sorry about the last few weeks, Mary. I hope you understand.
I'm getting used to it. But really, Jimmy, I've been talking to Dr. Gillespie. You've got to cut down on your work.
All right, I concede. Just as soon as Angela Kester gets well, I take a vacation.
Wonderful. She ought to be up and around in 10 days. Then you start your vacation?
Well, I don't mean the bullet wound. My mind. She's suffering terribly.
Do you really think there's a chance of curing her?
I think there is, Mary. One chance.
But I thought they tried everything.
Everything but an operation.
I don't understand.
A prefrontal lobotomy. It's her only chance.
But it's so risky, isn't it, Jimmy? Are you sure it's her only chance?
The last resort, I know. That's all that's left for Angela now.
If the operation fails?
It can't fail, Mary. I wish I could believe that. Come on, let's get that coffee.
Kildare, you're mad. A prefrontal lobotomy? You're just stark, staring mad.
Dr. Gillespie, you've been doing research on prefrontal lobotomies for the past 4 days. Now admit it.
You're getting worse than Nosy Parker.
No, what's your real opinion?
Jimmy, I don't know. I don't know. It seems pretty risky to me, trying it on a girl like Angela Kester.
Actually, the prefrontal lobotomy has been successful with patients of Angela's type.
Jimmy, sure, I know it has. What are the odds?
You've always said a doctor makes his own mind.
That's the way I like to hear you talk.
Dr. Kildare.
Well, Nosy, don't save those precious words for posterity. Spit them out.
Oh, Dr. Kildare, Mr. Stephen Kester to see you.
Send him in, Parker.
Kester, girl's husband?
Yes. Steve, good to see you.
Good to see you, Jim.
How is she? Physically, good shape. The rest of that. Oh, Dr. Gillespie, Stephen Kester.
Oh, yeah, doctor. Jimmy, about this operation you mentioned on the phone.
Yes, that's why I called you down here, Steve. I think it'll cure Angela, but we've got to have your permission before we go ahead.
I don't know. What's it going to involve?
I'll try to make it as brief as I can. Angela's mental trouble, her obsessions, her fears, are centered in this part of the brain here, see? Just inside the upper part of the forehead. The frontal lobes, we call them.
But how could an operation cure that part of the brain?
It wouldn't. Our only concern now is to cure the whole brain by permanently isolating those frontal lobes from the rest of the brain.
How is that possible, Doctor?
Well, it's a comparatively simple operation, Kester. An opening is made in the skull just above the frontal lobes. We insert into the brain an instrument called a leukotome. With that instrument, we sever the white tissue which connects the frontal lobe to the rest of the brain. That's what we call a prefrontal lobotomy.
What are the risks? I mean, what could happen?
Four alternatives, Steve. It could make Angela a little better, or it could make her a little worse. It could cure her completely, or it could kill her.
Jimmy, what would happen to her if she didn't have the operation?
We couldn't try any more shock treatments. She's already had the maximum. Her system wouldn't take it.
And without treatment, Kester, more suicide attempts, deterioration, until she's hopelessly insane. The operation's a last resort. You'll have to make the decision.
You recommend it, Jimmy?
I recommend it.
Still there?
Jimmy, operate.
You ready now, Jimmy?
Yes. Say a prayer, will you, Doctor?
Scared?
Yep.
So am I. Let's go.
Dr. Long, is the patient ready?
She's anesthetized. I've given her sodium pentothal.
Is it all right to proceed?
Yes, Doctor.
All right, Jimmy.
Scalpel. Sponge. Hemostat. Silver clips.
How's that wound, Kildare?
Bleeding's controlled. Wound's dry. Nurse?
Yes, Doctor.
Retractor. Periosteal elevator. Dr. Long?
Yes, Doctor.
Ready to proceed with the osteotomy. Her condition still good?
Blood pressure down, 90 over 68. Pulse, 88. Respiration, 24.
Miss Lamont?
Yes, Doctor.
Trefine. Have the water syringe ready. Forceps.
Good work, Jimmy.
Nurse, careful with the skull disc. Keep it moist.
Yes, doctor.
Scalpel for dural incision. Eyes. Quickly.
Yes, doctor.
Dr. Long, how's her condition?
Blood pressure was down, 90 over 68. Supplementing saline solution with blood. Pulse 90. Respiration 26. Blood pressure rising.
Ready to proceed with the lobotomy.
All right, proceed, doctor.
Nurse.
Yes, doctor.
Fluconazole. Ready with the lopiodol syringe.
Ready, doctor.
Localized perfectly. Easy. Got to go slow. Sponge.
Yes, doctor.
Very little bleeding. Fine work, Jimmy.
Fine instrument. Nurse ready to close the wound. Number 60 still for the dura. Skull disc. Good. Well moistened. Skin sutures.
Yes, doctor.
Sterile dressings. Everything all right, Dr. Long?
Condition's good.
Thank you, doctor. Thank you very much.
Good work, Kildare.
Jimmy, you've done yourself proud.
You better wait and see, Dr. Gillespie.
Jimmy, how long will it be before we know?
Oh, I estimate about 3 days in Angela's case. Might know definitely by then.
You mean if she's cured or if...
If she isn't cured, Mary. If she has to live out the rest of her life a hopeless lunatic. I might be pushing things, Steve. Might be too soon to tell definitely.
Jimmy, I've got to know. One way or the other.
It's only been 3 days, Steve. In a case like Angela's, it could be months before we know, for sure. It could be complications.
Jimmy, I've got to know now. I've got to.
All right, Steve. Here we are. You all set?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm all set.
You just woke up. Go over to the bed, Steve. Let her see you.
Angela? Angela?
Who is it? Don't touch me.
Hmm?
Get away. Get away from
Angela.
Me.
Angela.
Don't. Get away.
Angela, it's Stephen, your husband. Stephen.
Steve?
Angela. Angela, look at him.
Stephen. Stephen.
Angela, you're all right. Angela, you're cured. Jimmy, she is cured.
She'll tell you, Steve.
Stephen. Look. Look, my hands. My hands. They're free, Steve. My hands are free.
Jimmy?
That's right, Steve. Patient cured. Case closed.
In just a moment, we will return to the story of Dr. Kildare.
Quite soon to have the permanent results of the lobotomy operation. Some cases take a good deal longer.
Matilda, this shop talk's boring me. If you'll excuse me, I think I'll go over and heckle Dr. Carew. I think he's trying to impress something.
It's lucky Angela decided to make this party formal. First time I've ever seen Dr. Gillespie in a tuxedo.
Probably the last. Oh, look, Angela's sitting down at the piano. Mm-hmm.
Listen, Jimmy.
Beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, Jimmy. You made it that way.
You have just heard the story of Dr. Kildare, starring Lou Ayres and Lionel Barrymore. Dr. Kildare is presented by arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of East Side, West Side, starring Barbara Stanwyck, James Mason, Van Heflin, and Ava Gardner. The program was written by James Edward Moser and directed by William P. Russo. Original music composed and conducted by Walter Schumann. That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan, thanking you for listening.